Our latest episode of Soundtracking couldn't be better timed, what with Olivia Colman having just landed a Golden Globe for her performance as Queen Anne in The Favourite. If you haven't heard it already, her acceptance speech is particularly amusing, as always, and will most likely be one of several she has to deliver during this award season. Telling the story of two ambitious women played by Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone competing for Anne's affection, The Favourite is directed by our old friend Yorgos Lanthimos, and I'm delighted to say he returns to the show to discuss the sonic intricacies of his brilliant film. As you may recall, if you listened to his previous outing, Yorgos has never hired a composer, preferring instead to source existing compositions. That said, he's most happy to profess extreme gratitude to his sound designer, Johnny Byrne, as, in fact, are we. For Johnny not only provided us with a couple of specific cues from the movie, but also pointed us in the direction of a lovely video, which reveals how he and his team went about soundscaping the drama. Now, you can find that video in full if you head to soundworkscollection.com, though we've dropped a bit of it into our conversation here too. Before that, we begin with one of the many pieces of classical music that Yorgos uses in lieu of score, Water Music, Suite No. 1 in F by Handel. Welcome back to Soundtracking, Yorgos.
Thank you.
Now, I feel kind of slightly guilty because I'm talking to you at 10 a.m. the day after you've just won 10 awards at the BIFAs, 5 Craft Awards for your wonderful team, and 5 awards for the other side.
The other wonderful team.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like this is the worst time for you in terms of, I'm assuming you had a late night, quite rightly so, celebrating.
Yeah, well, relatively speaking, we behaved. We all had stuff to do this morning. So.
You must be thrilled, though, by the response.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, it's great when people enjoy what, you know, we do, and it's acknowledged. And I'm really happy for everyone. Because they, you know, they put a lot of hard work, and they're very talented people, and it's great.
Particularly, I mean, it's great when those people behind the scenes get that recognition, you know, because we love Olivia Colman, and she gives great speeches, whether it's her own or someone else's.
Yeah.
Can she just pick up all the awards and do all the speeches, because she's brilliant.
Yeah.
But you know, your cast and director, your cinematographer, hair and makeup, Sandy for costume and production design as well. It's wonderful that those people behind the scenes get that recognition.
Yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, as I said, they, you know, it's a lot of hard work. Most of the times, you know, people even don't know what they do, what these people do.
Yeah,
but there's basically all I have to do is choose the right people, work with the best, and yeah, then I look good. And it's great. That's what I said last night when I accepted the director award, because, you know, basically all a filmmaker or director does is just make choices, you know, this thing or that thing, this person or the other person. So you just have to choose well, and then everything will fall into place.
Yeah, but it's what you get out of those people once you've chosen them. You undersell your talent, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, that too, but you have to start from the right place.
The last time we spoke, I think you just finished filming The Favourite, or you were just about to wrap filming, and you told me that that Johnny, your sound designer, was currently recording Horses.
Yeah.
which was a great discussion we had just about the intensity of his commitment to what he does and making sure he gets everything really precise.
That's the one we didn't get. And I can't be sad getting 10 awards. But, you know, the ones we didn't get was editing and sound. And, you know, I would have loved for them to, you know, to get that too, being greedy.
Hey, there's plenty more award ceremonies to come.
So. No, but because, I mean, it's, you know, I think sometimes, you know, it's a period film, so it's not going to have the most impressive sound.
Yeah.
Or editing for that matter, but... You know, sometimes, you know, people tend to be impressed by something which is...
the obvious things, more so, I think,
obvious
sometimes.
And I'm hoping, you know, people understand, you know, what a great work both my editor, Yorgos, another Yorgos, we call him Blackfish.
Blackfish?
Yeah.
Why?
So we don't confuse each other. It's his it's the translation of his surname in English.
Okay.
He's called Yorgos Mavropsaredis, and we call him Blackfish.
What would be the translation of your surname? What would be your
name? There isn't one.
Oh, shame.
I mean, it's very rare. and Johnny Byrne. You know, they did amazing work, and I hope people, you know, understand that, although it's not, you know, a science fiction film.
Yeah.
But it really makes the film more unique and original.
I'm Johnny Byrne. I'm the sound designer and re-recording mixer on this film. So, on a film set, the only thing that really gets recorded is the dialogue spoken. And ideally, you want it free of noise and clear in diction.
Did you just look at me? Did you? Look at me! Look at me! How dare you! Close your eyes!
So you have this dense dialogue.
So you once were a lady and now you are nothing. A bit of scullery scraps. How very sad.
I'm still the lady.
And you silence it whilst you experiment with the director and your team on how to build the whole sound world around it. And how you choose to do that is key to the whole filmic experience. Usually a period film just needs sound to be supporting the dramatic action. It's not monsters or science fiction. It's a period of time where we know what things sounded like. So you work within that and develop a credible sound language to help steer the story that the audience can believe.
I will not betray my mistress's trust.
Good. And let's not forget Yorgos' exceedingly high standards of perfection, which meant a very big part of this process was to go to the palace ourselves and discover and record how it sounds. Rattle when you move around these rooms. You know, they all happen for real. It's kind of genuinely how that place sounds when you haven't had to tape loads of rubber to everything because it's a film set and you need the clean dialogue. What we tried to do was be incredibly truthful, but use it in a way that expresses the emotion of the film, even if sometimes we rely on things maybe a little outside to do that. So we did it for real, and we left there with a real insight and a massive library of sound. Thank you, Your Majesty.
I was really excited to see The Favourite, and my expectations were high, and the reality of watching it exceeded all expectations. It is truly,
Thanks.
Truly wonderful. It's a rumpus. It's just awesome. There's so many brilliant things about it. And, you know, you did this great thing, I think, as well, where people knew who had been kind of cast in these roles, and we knew what you'd done up to this point, but nothing really got out about the film and what it was and what you'd created, which is such a rarity, I think, these days in terms. You seem to know a lot about films before you even see them.
Yeah.
Was that deliberate?
Well, I think I'm generally protective, you know, when I'm making the films. But I guess for the other ones, not as many people care. This was maybe on this one, people cared more to learn. But I just find that it kind of ruins things for me as well. Even as an audience member, you know, I don't want to have seen a lot of stuff from the film or know a lot about it and have a preconceived notion before I see it. I just want to, you know, be excited by a little hint and know maybe I know the people's work or have seen like something short that intrigues me, and then I just want to go and watch it. When you feed people with so many things and you show them so many things, you kind of lose even interest, I find. Like, even if whatever you show is, you know, great and exciting, when they have too much of it, I think people are maybe turned off and go like, okay, I've seen a lot of this thing, maybe I'll watch it some point later. You know, I'll skip it this time. So I try to, you know, keep it as... And there's a nice mystery about films, and you don't have to tell everything. That's why you're making the film. You show the film, and that's what people should enjoy. So I try to keep it as mysterious as possible.
How was this experience for you being the first film that you hadn't written?
Well, it was very similar by the end of it. With the work that I'd done before, because I spent a lot of years developing this script, and I worked very closely with Tony McNamara that we ended up writing the script with, based on the original script by Deborah Davis. Yeah. But it was a long process. I worked a little bit with Deborah in the beginning to restructure her script and focus more on the women and pare down the politics, but then I felt that we needed a very different voice. So we looked for a writer for a very long time, and we read a lot of screenplays and plays, and we ended up finding this Australian guy. who I felt immediately that had the right voice and felt very confident about working with him. And then we spent like 7-8 years.
Wow.
Well, I mean, it wasn't non-stop 7-8 years, but during this time, we would go back to it, and I'd do other things. I'd go off and make other films, and he did his own stuff. But during those years, we would keep meeting and working on it and doing passes on the script. So by the end of it, it had become so much, you know, one of the things that I've worked so hard on and for so long, that it was very much similar to the process that I followed with my other films.
Because it does feel like your voice is completely there. It's your take on things. You know, you've got a brilliant way with drama and comedy that's really unique. And I think the way that these three women have taken that and run with it, in particular, is just like something I've never seen on screen before. It's just a joy
very
to
nice
watch.
To you. Yeah, you can only hope that you provide, you know, your collaborators with the best that you can, the best material, the best conditions, and then you let them get on with it.
You take a chance as well when you cast people in that chemistry is going to work. And with Emma and Rachel and Olivia, there's this energy between this kind of triangle of them that's just exceptional. And I wanted to ask how you helped them kind of prepare for when cameras were rolling. Was there a lot of rehearsal? Was there a lot of preparation? And
yeah, we had like 3 weeks of rehearsals. We contradict each other. Some say 2 weeks. I say 2 weeks. They say 3 weeks. Well, basically, it was, I think, a total of 3 weeks. But during that time, we had to do also, you know, horse riding lessons, shooting guns, hair and makeup tests. So there was all that.
Yeah.
It's but
like
we
film
did have,
camp.
Yeah. But we did have a lot of rehearsal. I mean, almost every day, and I think during that time is when they, you know, all bonded. Not just the three women, the three men as well.
Yeah.
Joe, James, and Nick. It was all six of them in a room, and we fooled around a lot. We did a lot of exercises, you know, theater exercises, acting exercises. We worked very physically. We had our choreographer around, Constanza Macras, and we would do, you know, things to help them finally get to the physicality that I had in mind, because one of the main things that I wanted to do with this film is allow the physicality to feel quite modern in a way and contemporary, because I didn't feel like we should follow the example of, you know, period films that have created a certain expectation of how people move, how they speak, and all those kind of things. So we fooled around a lot in trying and, you know, break that kind of mold of this is how a period film looks like and feels like. So we rehearsed a lot, and I think all of them got really comfortable with each other. They got to know each other really well. Yeah, when the time came to be in front of the cameras, they just knew that they could depend on each other, and they felt comfortable in doing anything in front of their colleagues, and they wouldn't mind failing. They knew that, you know, the others would be there to support them, and it was a great experience.
The Queen is an extraordinary person.
They were all staring, weren't they? I can tell even if I can't see, and I heard the word fat, and ugly.
No one but me would dare, and I did not.
She's been stalked by tragedy.
Everyone leaves me. He dies.
I apologize for my appearance. I hoped I might be employed here by you. As something.
A monster for the children to play with, perhaps.
It is important to make new friends in court, is it not?
You're so beautiful.
Stop it, you mock me.
If I were a man, I would ravish you.
You have become close to Abigail.
She is a viper. You're jealous.
You must send Abigail away.
I do not want to.
Let's shoot something. Sometimes it is hard to remember whether you have loaded the pellet or not.
I must take control of my circumstance.
Throw!
I'm on my side. Always.
Favour is a breeze that shifts direction all the time. Then, in an instant, you're back sleeping with a bunch of scabrous whores.
As it turns out, I am capable of much unpleasantness.
Did you just look at me?
Look at me! How dare you! Close your eyes!
I could not just stand by and let you destroy me.
Enjoying all of this, aren't you?
Oh, it is fun to be queen sometimes.
If you do not go, I will start kicking you. And I will not stop.
My dear friend, how good to see you've returned from hell.
I'm sure you shall pass through it one day.
Music, because you approach music slightly unconventionally, is not even the right word to use, really, but you don't hire a composer to then score
no,
the film.
No, I wish I could. The thing is that I guess my process doesn't really allow me to work with a composer, because I like to do a lot of research before I start or during rehearsals and, you know, find music that I think would be fitting to the film, and then we shoot it, and then after that, especially during the editing process, I spend a lot of time listening to music and trying things out and figuring things out. So by the end of it, you know, I spend a lot of time trying to find the appropriate piece of music for the tone that I'm trying to create. And then I use it and I try it and we edit it, and then it's there. And it's really hard after that whole process to bring on someone and say,
give me something like this.
Yeah, do something like this, because they'll never do it. And it's, and you've lived with it for so long, and they might do something even better than that, but then it's not what you, you know,
that you've connected with.
Yeah, connected with and, you know, found as the, you know, the perfect piece to create the tone. So anything different just doesn't work the same way, and it kind of makes everything fall apart for me. So it has been hard for me to bring on someone later down the line. What I've been thinking is that maybe I should just bring someone earlier in the process, yeah, like a composer that I'm interested in, and, you know, have them do, you know, music before start editing, in order to have that. So I'm hoping I can do that at some point.
It's no rush. It seems to be working what you're doing. Yeah. What was the thought process in terms of, and when did, at what point did you know what type of music you wanted to include in the film? Because obviously it's a period piece, and there's certain instrumentation that is, I guess, associated with that period and that time.
Yeah.
Harpsichords and that kind of thing as well. And yeah, what was the...
It was a lot of trial and error. I fooled around with more contemporary music, and I did use some of it. Which is from the 70s, or there's a composer, Anna Meredith, that I use a couple of her pieces, which are of our day, very contemporary. At some point, I did fool around about the idea of doing even the classical stuff, the Baroque stuff, in a contemporary version. But I just felt that the original recordings had, you know, a certain kind of color that would be lost, you know, if you did the whole thing contemporary. So I ended up, I think during the editing process mostly, I mean, I kind of was playing around with the idea from before, but it became clear during the editing process that I would want to keep some of it loyal to the period, depending on where we are in the film and what the scenes are. But then I could go off and use something much more contemporary, like Luc Ferrari's music that we used, which is almost as a sound design. It's very minimalist. And then having done that, I felt that I could use even, you know, music, you know, from romantic composers, because which wasn't of the period, but it just felt right. And, mm-hmm. you know, using contemporary music kind of allowed you to go anywhere, and you didn't have to be that, you know, period specific. So I think it formed during editing a lot, the actual decisions of including other pieces that weren't of the period necessarily. And I also tried a lot to, you know, find music that's not, that hasn't been used a lot.
Yeah.
That's always...
Is that because hard to do?
It's hard because, you know, all the great pieces, people have kind of discovered them. But, you know, if you look hard enough, you can find stuff. And I definitely tried a lot to not use anything Kubrick has used. Because I knew it was going to be, you know, because you just don't want to go there, basically.
Just get that instant comparison, don't you?
So it was, you know, a long research process to find the right music. You know, there's like some pieces from Johann Sebastian Bach's brother, mm-hmm. who's not as well known.
There you go.
So you go, you know, down those roads and try and find pieces that are more obscure and haven't been used a lot, because, you know, it's classical Baroque music, so yeah. It's been around for a while.
There's one particular scene that music is part of the narrative, which is the dance scene.
Yes.
With Rachel and Joe. Did you play the music on set?
Yeah, because actually it's been played live. So we have musicians there that actually played that piece. And that's like one of the most straightforward things. It's Handel, I think. Yeah, we picked that early on so we could choreograph the dance.
Which is brilliant.
Having the piece, and then I really wanted the... Although you don't necessarily see it as much, that the musicians are actually playing live there. I mean, it just felt great, and I think that kind of comes through. So yeah, we had musicians that actually played the piece, we recorded it, and then we would play it for the actors for other shots so that they could sing. Thank you.
The dance is quite, it's this wonderful mix of, I don't know how you describe it.
Kind
of,
yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know, like if you were going to a Baroque fitness class, it would be some of the dance class you'd do that, but mixed with these brilliant contemporary movements as well. It's a wonderful mix of things as well. What were the conversations you had with your choreographer about that?
I think it was more practical in the end. I mean, I knew Constanza's work and I really liked it. So that's how we got to work together on this. So, you know, I trusted her. I only told her in the beginning, like, look at the dances of the period were. Mm-hmm. And, you know, be inspired, but we can do something of our own that feels contemporary and break it up and go off and have fun with it. And then she started putting these pieces together and we would all sit and go like, oh, this is great, not this, maybe you can use that or maybe it can go there from there. And, you know, we kind of all, you know, rehearsed it a lot. And, you know, Joe and Rachel really rehearsed it every day in order to get there. And then there was the added difficulty of the costumes, you know, especially Rachel's. It posed quite a few difficulties. So by the end of it, we also had to change some of the moves because of the costumes, because they came in late. So during, you know, until we shot it, we're basically tweaking it and figuring out what it was. It was really fun to do.
Is that the costume where she's got the yellow shoes and the yellow underwear?
Yeah.
Brilliant. It's a great little kind of like, I'm a little rebel underneath here kind of thing. It's great. That's a lovely kind of touch from Sandy Powell as well, with the kind of, the costumes are amazing in it as well.
Yeah, she's good, isn't she?
She's really good. Yeah. Do you have music around set? Is music?
Sometimes. I mean, when there's not a lot of dialogue, or before and after we do a scene, I sometimes do like to create a bit of a looser or more concentrated atmosphere in a way, because you know you drown out all the noise and the voices, and people are focused to this one tone. So I do use it sometimes.
And what would inform the choice of music that you would play?
Oh, it's just mood every day.
Just,
you know,
your...
It could be something relevant to what I've been trying to use in the film, or something completely irrelevant. Just something that makes us feel more relaxed and
know,
takes away the pressure. And, no, but it's not psychological. It's not
manipulative.
Yeah, it's not manipulative, and it's not directly linked to what we're doing. It's just, you know, music that fills the space in a certain way and creates a mood that doesn't have necessarily to do with the scene that we're doing or anything like that. Well, I might have used a bit of dramatic music for Rachel, one of her scenes, that she goes down the corridor and cries. But that was something like, I kind of like to do that, like almost see it as the finished shot.
Yeah.
Because I used some of the music that I was thinking of using, and because we didn't really have dialogue or anything. You know, I did play her like really loud, dramatic music.
Like a silent movie almost.
Yeah, like a silent movie, and you know, like you see it in the daily, in the rushes, you know, it comes back and there's the shot with the music, you know, bad quality in the background, but you kind of get a sense of it, and it's fun to do that sometimes. And you know, it goes to the editor as well, and he sees this thing and goes like, oh, there's music in this thing, what's going on? But very rarely, you know, you get the opportunity to do something like that. Thank you.
music when you're writing?
Not necessarily. I mean, most of the times, you know, my writing part is like discussing a lot with the writer that I'm working with. So yeah. It's much more focused work. So I don't. Mm. No, I don't think so. I do that much. I listen to it when I think.
Yeah.
When I'm on my own thinking, mm-hmm. work, you know, about the scripts and the film.
Yeah. What's next? Do you know?
I don't know. We have quite a few projects now that we started developing, because I ended up making these two films, The Killing of a Sacred Deer and The Favorite, almost back to back.
Yeah.
So it didn't leave me any time in between to progress with the stuff that we were writing. We started writing. So they have kind of piled up now.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to getting back to, you know, the creative part of the work and, figure out which one is going to progress further soonest.
Yeah.
So to decide which one is going to be next.
I look forward to it. I think you're going to have a busy couple of months in the meantime. But Yorgos, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank
Cheers.
You. Thanks.
Just let me wake up in the morning to the smell of new mown hay, to laugh and cry, to live and die in the brightness of my day. I wanna hear the pealing bells of distant churches sing, but most of all, please free me from this aching metal ring, and open out this cage towards the sun. For just this skyline pigeon dreaming of the open, waiting for the day he can spread his wings and fly away again. Fly away, skyline pigeon, fly towards the things you've left so very far behind.
From the closing credits to The Favourite, that's the harpsichord version of Skyline Pigeon by Elton John, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with director Yorgos Lanthimos. My huge thanks to Yorgos for taking the time to chat with me again. The Favourite is on general release around the world now and is a thoroughly original and gripping take on the period drama by turns bawdy, cynical and tragicomic. Without exception, the performances are also superb. Thanks also to Johnny Byrne for all his help. We'll be sure to sit down with him to discuss his craft very, very soon. Now, you can catch up with all of our previous episodes via edithbowman.com, which is also the place to subscribe to the podcast. iTunes works just as well if you prefer, and please do rate us while you're there. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And please do keep sharing the word on your socials if you like what you hear. Next up is John S. Baird, whose new Laurel and Hardy biopic, Stan and Ollie, is utterly charming. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell, and if you know my husband Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.